Mackenzie, I think that one of the most important things to know about yourself is what your professional wrestling gimmick would be if you were a wrestler.
Oh, gosh. This is a core personality trait we need to understand about ourselves. Got it.
Yeah, you can never really know yourself until you figure this out. So I've made it a little easier on you. I've pulled up and I linked you to this wrestling name generator site. And I did some for you and you did some for me. So I'm it gave me 10 options. I'm going to give you my favorite three. And you have to pick out of those three which one your wrestling name would be.
And you're doing this because I can't decide things. Got it.
Yes, I'm going to limit you. You can't be like, well, it would be one of these six. So would your wrestling name be Kana, the Empress Stone? That's all one name. Her nickname is the Empress. I realized reading it, it wasn't that obvious. Would it be Drew Slaughterhouse Canyon? That doesn't really flow. Or would it be Alexa El Diablo del Blanco Yang?
Oh,
there is a lot of culture in that name. That is, yeah. That's
Did it
the
end
American
on Yang?
Name.
Did I hear Yang?
Yang is
the
last name. Alexa Yang, and her nickname is El Diablo del Blanco.
Okay, but I think that's kind of hilarious that it's Alexa Yang and then
exactly.
Del Blanco. I think
America's
I'm going to have to go.
A melting pot.
I think that's the one I'm going to go with. Although Kana was a strong entry, I'm not going to lie. That was pretty solid. But
is El Diablo del Blanco the devil of white?
I'm the not white devil. The white devil.
Oh. Well, shouldn't it just be El Diablo Blanco? Like, Del Blanco means of white or from white.
Mm-hmm.
It's like of the white people, not just the white devil.
See, but maybe not, because like, it feels a little blasphemous for my Hispanic culture. They're going to be like, you're not white.
Too late. You already picked Alexa Yang.
That's true. So I did. I can commit. All right. So that's Alexa Yang, El Diablo de Blanco. Is that what it was?
Yes.
Okay. Got it. I'm in. So, I'm committed.
Now, knowing that this would be your gimmick, what do you think would be your theme song when you came out to the ring? What are you strutting out to?
Oh, God, that's really hard off the top of my head. I mean, it feels like it's got to be something like Devil Went Down to Georgia or something.
Ooh.
Like, you know.
I hope they can pay for the rights, but that's a good one.
Right? Feels kind of like a vibe. Ooh. Do you remember like that 90s gymnast that used to do her routine to that song all the time? Nadia Comaneci? That was like her move. Anyway.
I didn't follow a ton of 90s gymnastics. But
that's fair. I mean, it was only the best time in gymnastics, but that's cool. I get
I'll
it.
I'll take your word for it. All right. So that would be your walkout music. Can you think of a finishing maneuver? Like just what would you call your move that you polish people off with? Down for the 1, 2, 3.
The pitchfork, maybe?
It's a little on the nose, but in wrestling, honestly, like that makes total sense.
I was going to say, I'm not big into wrestling. I feel like I got to do something cheesy, right? Like,
yes.
Yeah. So
that's pretty much 60% of the profession is pure cheese. Yeah. There's a lot of athletic ability involved, but cheese is the name of the game.
I think for my first pass, I did pretty good then. Just
yeah, you nailed it. I'm pretty impressed. I hope I can do just as well. Okay. Hit
okay.
Me.
Here we go. Well, do you want me to narrow it to three for you as well? Because
yeah,
I didn't
give me
do
three
that.
Choices. Give me three choices because 10 is too many.
Okay. Well, one that's standing out at me just glancing at the list is Bruno Superstar Hernandez.
Bruno Hernandez.
I know, but not just any Bruno.
Name is Bruno Hernandez. That sounds like just some guy, but okay.
But he's a superstar. Don't underestimate Bruno.
We don't underestimate Bruno.
Exactly. We don't talk about Bruno. That should be your theme song. I mean, obviously. Okay, I also really like this one because I don't know what it has to do with wrestling. All right. Zach, the $1,000 man Williams.
$1,000 man?
Cool.
As
okay.
of, there's already been a $1 million man, so I'm gonna be 10% of what he is.
So you're not a $1 million man, you're only 1,000.
Wait, is it 10% or 1%? 1%. 1% of what
don't make
he
me
is.
Math. It is after hours. I refuse.
Yeah.
Okay.
So far, we're 0 for 2, but let's see what the third one is.
Okay. Just to like get a little culture in here, let's do Sergey, top dollar Volkov.
Okay. That is a combination of, I'm pretty sure, three actual rustlers. Like, I think there's a person really? Who goes by Top Dollar. There's definitely been Volkovs, and I'm assuming there's been a Sergey something or another. But, oh my goodness.
Do you want to hear him again? Bruno Superstar Hernandez.
Yeah.
Zach the $1,000 Man Williams.
That's the best name of the bunch.
Yeah. And then Sergey Top Dollar Volkov. I will say, like, the rest weren't that great. Those were the best ones. I'm still like, looking at the
Sergey
list.
Sergey Volkov is a badass name, but I'm a, like, you think it's this like hardened person from Russia or somewhere like that.
I was going to say,
like,
very Russian.
But the nickname Top Dollar, just it makes me
feel
like
Sergey
he's a
Volkov
bad
feels like Russian mob to me, and it's going to fuck you up. But the Top Dollar is not so much.
You know what? I know that I hated it when I first heard it. I'm just going to be the $1,000 man. I'll just be the $1,000
really?
Man. Really? Yeah.
Wow, that's a choice. Okay, Zach the $1,000 man Williams. All right, well then what's your theme song?
I would come out to Save That Money by Lil Dicky.
Is that why? You were like, I have this song at the ready is what it was.
Yeah, so I would come out to that because it's all about, you know, pinching pennies.
Okay, fair. I mean, yeah, he's the $1,000 man, not the $1,000,000 man. So we got to pitch them pennies. Okay, but what about the move then? What's the move?
The finishing move, I think I would call it, it's a long move title, so they'd have to shorten it into something. But I think the original move name would be called Hit You Back on the First. You know, it's a long name. Maybe we can abbreviate it like the letter like HY. Like
the budget themes are strong here.
This is all what wrestling is. I'd be a terrible wrestler, but I could probably book a territory. No problem.
For sure. They just wouldn't want to see you wrestle. Just put someone else in there.
Put your shirt back on. Okay.
Hey, you don't talk about my friend that way. That's rude. Well, hello, folks. Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Lamar.
And today we are talking about the Iron Claw. As part of March Madness, but our March Madness, which is a slightly different version than all you basketball fans will be aware of. It's just going to be a month of sports movies, which I'm super stoked about, actually. And we're kicking it off with this one because we've actually been thinking about this one for a hot minute. It's been like, what, since November, December?
It came out, I believe, around Christmas. I think it was a December release. But the thing is, we thought March Madness, we just spent a month doing Oscar films and really like this highbrow stuff and these long-ass movies. And I thought March Madness was going to be just, let's dumb it back down. Let's do some shit from our childhood. And instead, we're starting with another
another heavy emotional film.
Yeah.
But hey, we'll get into that in a second. For now, what are we drinking to power us through this movie?
Well, so if you couldn't tell from the cold open, most people that listen to this podcast know that I myself am a wrestling fan. Now, I don't have cable, so I'm not watching it every week, but I discovered wrestling when I was like 9 years old. I've gone in and out of it over the years, watching it sometimes when it's good, not watching it when it's bad. I know there are things that I like about it. And as I said, there are things that I find incredibly cheesy, but as an art form, I find it very entertaining. And so I think I got on my soapbox last week during Barbie 3 or 4 times. I'm not ready to get off my soapbox yet. So let me make point. When you say to a wrestling fan, well, you know, it's fake, right? That is the equivalent of doing this, which is an alcohol-free cocktail. So if I choose to drink this, I don't need you to come up to me and tell me, well, you know there's no booze in it, right? You know it won't get you drunk. Wrestling is fiction, just like anything else on television. And the people who like it enjoy it for the stories that it tells. Imagine if you could like watch a football season and the Super Bowl was completely screwed. Like they would make sure that it would always come down to the last play and it would always be a dramatic game. And maybe you find out that the one quarterback is sleeping with the other team, like one of their wives. And you're like, oh shit, I want to see him get hit hard. And then it happens. Wouldn't that be great? So just let us have sort of our scripted art. There is still, you know, a physical component to it. Okay, now that being said, I'm going to crack this open, and now I'm going to pour it into this glass that already has rum in it because I'm pretty cool, so I can't do no alcohol. I just wanted to make a point.
Okay, ooh, what are you pour, drinking? Though. Love it. It looks really gross, though. Hang on, we're going to pause. What's that flavor?
This is mango chili crush.
See, I was on the money that it's going to be gross. All right, perfect. Looks delish. Hope you love that. Also, can we talk about how touchy Lamar was about wrestling in the first 30 fucking seconds? I'm super stoked for this episode, actually. I went the simple route because I looked at this movie. I love a cocktail, but I kind of try to do movie themed things drinks wise. And they do not drink a single fucking cocktail in this movie. It is all beer all the time. It's an aggressive amount of beer, actually.
It's a Texas family. They're big beer people.
They're big beer people. And they are, to your point, a Texas family. So I actually went the route of getting a Texas beer, which is not always the way that I go with it. So I'm doing a Crawford Bock by Carbock Brewing Company.
I do like a Crawford Bock. They do some good ones, too.
They do together, some
they
good ones.
Love Street is theirs, right?
I don't think that's them.
No?
Maybe. No, you're right. You're right. That is. Okay. You're right. I'm trying to visualize it. But yeah, you're right. It is them. But yeah, so I went that route, of course, with our resident koozie. But yeah, I'm just going to pay homage to some Texas beer here. So cheers.
Cheers.
All right. Well, as we said, we have established that Lamar is going to be real touchy this whole episode, and I'm stoked. But also, this is kind of a heavy film, so, you know, proceed with caution. But it's a really powerful, interesting story. So we'll get into that. We're going to do our typical, we kind of give you the basics. We do a quick spoiler-free section, give you our suggested go see it, don't go see it, whatever. And then we'll get into the spoiler section where we really dig deep into the plot. So to kick us off, we're going to do some of the basics. Easy on the writer-director side of things. It's one dude, Sean Durkin.
It never happens.
That never happens. Sean Durkin, Dead Ringers, you may know him from the remake of the David Cronenberg film that was originated by Jeremy Irons. They did a series remake of that recently with Rachel Weisz. I've heard great things. I haven't watched it. That show, the original film, actually is super gnarly if you haven't seen it. But he did the remake of that. So interesting that that's his previous work to this. Very different.
I looked at his IMDb and I honestly didn't recognize anything that he's done. So this was my first taste of him as a director, as a writer, and it's pretty damn good. So I hope he does more stuff from here.
Yeah, other than the Dead Ringers thing, I didn't recognize anything else either, actually. So all pretty small. He's done he's had a decent amount of producing credits as well and a few directorial credits, mostly writing credits, but same thing, just haven't recognized most of that. So, but yeah, he does a great job of telling the story, and we'll get more into some details on that later, but the way the writing had to change a little bit for the accuracy of the story and all of that. But he does a really good job of how he handles that, I think, overall. So
agreed. And this was, I think, a 7-year script for him.
Yeah. Which is 7-year script. Mm-hmm. Gnarly. Major cast and crew are, of course, leading the way. Zac Efron. I say of course because I feel like this got a lot of attention when this came out because of how different he looks in this, because he bulked up and he looks crazy. But yeah, so he's playing Kevin Von Erich.
I've got to wonder for Zac Efron's sake, because I've seen The Rock over the years. I remember when The Rock was a wrestler, and I mean, he was in good shape, but he has just grown over the course of his life, and I just don't know. When you bulk up in that capacity, will your body just go back down, or is it only full steam ahead like The Rock, who just seems to get bigger every year?
I think it's not great for you to go up and down. I mean, there's been lots of, stories of that, people bulking up and thinning down for films. It's really hard on your body. And I think it was probably very hard on his body. He also, I think it's important to note, he looks a little bit different because he actually had an accident a few years ago. So he had a car accident or something. So his jawline and some of that is just fundamentally different than it used to be. But he is, very much super bulked up. And I think he's always been a muscular guy. Yeah. But this is just next level. And it's true of all of them. I mean, they all bulk up a bit, but I think he's the most notable of the cast, even if you see the other cast in prior work. So
Yeah. This is probably the most dramatic role I've ever seen him in. I know that he's done other dramatic roles. Mm-hmm. I know I always think of him as being more of a, you know, Disney Channel and then into comedies and sort of romance films. But I know he played Ted Bundy in a movie or series not long ago. I didn't see that. But this is the most dramatic role I've seen him in. And I thought he was great.
He did a really good job of Ted Bundy also, actually. I will say he does a really good job of this dramatic role. But he also did do Ted Bundy really well, which, you know, is, of course, creepy and terrifying. Yeah. But he does a really good job at these dramatic turns that he's done. But, yeah, I think he is maybe most well known for the comedy stuff. But he's, you know, like High School Musical and all that kind of stuff. But he's definitely done a couple heavy duty ones. He also did a musical. He did The Greatest Showman, which he was really good in as well. So that was cool. I love that. But yeah, so he's supposed to be the eldest living brother. And that's an important note. And then we also have Jeremy Allen White, who is playing Cary Von Erich, who he's been in, what is he most well known for right
Shameless
now? Probably
or The Bear would the be Bear. My guess. Right yeah. now, The Bear is probably, that's the one that he's winning all the awards and whatnot for. But I
was going to say,
on Shameless back in the day.
Okay. I actually never saw Shameless, and I meant to for a really long time.
I saw the first two seasons, maybe. I just didn't stick with it because I forget. I think it was on Showtime or something, and I didn't have Showtime. So,
yeah, it was on Showtime, and I still have it. I could go back and watch it. But I've heard good things. So he's in it. And then we also have Harris Dickinson, plays David Von Erich. And he's been in a few things. He's kind of blowing up lately, to be honest. And he's really good as well. He did most recently, I think you probably would know him from Triangle of Sadness.
Yeah, I couldn't place it at first. But when I came home and looked it up, I was like, oh, that's where I remember him from, because he was really good in that.
Yeah, he was really good in that. He also did Where the Crawdads Sing happened recently as well. And I think a couple years back he was in Maleficent. So yeah, he's done a few things. And then we have a couple others. Maura Tierney plays their mom, Doris Von Erich. And then we have Holtz McKelney, who plays Fritz Von Erich. And Stanley Simons, I'm not sure. Maybe Simons, it looks like, for Mike Von Erich, another brother. And then Lily James, who plays Pam, who marries Kevin. So she's the only, I think, really featured wife of the brothers who comes around a lot in the film. But most of them were married at various times. They don't even always show that. So there's definitely a slight discrepancy between real life and the film. But overall, those are your core cast of characters and core family members.
Yeah, that's pretty much everybody who I would consider main cast. The only other one I want to call out there for the cast and the crew actually is Chavo Guerrero Jr., who has been wrestling since, I think, the mid to late 90s, maybe even before that in Mexico. But I remember watching him on TV when I was a kid. He's the nephew of the late Eddie Guerrero, who was one of my favorite wrestlers. And he actually not only has a bit part in this as an old school wrestler that, you know, I don't even know if he has dialogue or not, but he trained all of the actors. So the interviews and the publicity and the press that Zac Efron, Jeremy Allen White, all the other dudes did for this, they shouted him out of teaching them not just here's how to wrestle, like get in the ring and do the thing, but here's how you play to the crowd and here's how you get heat or a reaction kind of thing. And when you come out, like feeling the moment. So he had a big hand in, I think, how accurate the wrestling components of this film feel.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, that's exciting. I mean, I didn't know any of that backstory because I'm not huge into wrestling, but this was a really interesting kind of foray into that, as this is a very famous family in wrestling. I mean, they're in the Wrestling Hall of Fame now, and I had never heard of this before this film, but this is pretty legendary in the wrestling world. So I'll give you guys a quick plot summary and then we'll dig into some quick review, which is, this is a true story of the inseparable Von Erich brothers who made history in the intensely competitive world of professional wrestling in the early 1980s. Through tragedy and triumph under the shadow of their domineering father and coach, the brothers seek larger-than-life immortality on the biggest stage in sports. So, super interesting, pretty accurate summary other than the biggest stage in sports. I have like a bone to pick with that, but okay. Other than that, Lamar would agree with them. The rest of us are like, huh? Anyway, But I feel like that about captures it. Anything else that's, you know,
no,
major?
I think that to me, and I guess we're moving into sort of our review section, our spoiler-free section of reviewing, but what I like about this is it doesn't feel like a rustling movie. It feels really like a family, granted, mm-hmm. you know, the circumstances of the rest of this, it's not what I would call a family movie, but it's a story about a bunch of brothers, and it feels like a story of their growth and them trying to break into this industry, but it doesn't feel like necessarily just a rustling movie as much as some, what I would think. If you told somebody that isn't a fan, oh, it's a movie about rustling, they probably wouldn't want to watch this, but I think more people will end up enjoying this than think they will.
For the class, have you seen Foxcatcher?
Yes. Yeah.
How would you say this compares in your view, like stylistically for a wrestling fan? Like, are you going to like this one similar, better, worse, like as a fan?
I honestly think you would like this one more because Foxcatcher is, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's collegiate or Olympic wrestling, like Greco-Roman style wrestling, which is, you know, that is actual unscripted, mm-hmm. just two people grappling and whatnot. Whereas this one, it
this
really
is like the show of it all.
Yeah, it gives you a behind. That's what I like, is it sort of gives you the business of it. It doesn't pretend that it's all quote unquote real. Like, yes, they do get hurt. Yeah. Yes, there are injuries. Obviously, there is a predetermined finish, but there is a story that they're trying to tell. But I like that it lets you in within the first 20 minutes of them talking backstage, like, I'm going to do this move, then you're going to do this, then we'll go to the finish. And, you know, it gets into the backstage politicking of it all. Mm-hmm. It's because it's predetermined. There can only be one person at the top and you have to sort of fight in the ring, but also fight backstage to protect your territory. So it's interesting to see that play out as well.
Yeah, that's a really interesting perspective. And yeah, I mean, that was just the first one that came to mind as being wrestling adjacent. I don't know how many other films that I could think of that are doing something similar. But
with Mickey Rourke,
yeah,
that was fictional, that was not based on a true story, but I remember really liking that one, but it's been a while since I've seen it.
Yeah. And I mean, Foxcatcher is similar to this in that it's based on a true story. So yeah, that's interesting. I think for this, for me, again, just kind of flowing into the review bit, is it was a really well done story. I mean, we'll get into like some of the changes they had to make to kind of make it work. But overall, it's a pretty accurate telling and it's beautifully acted and it's, I think, well shot. And you get to see, to your point, like some of the behind the scenes kind of stuff that you feel like you wouldn't really know otherwise. And all that's pretty cool. I think the thing that's fair to say about it is that it's pretty heavy. I mean, the whole thing is predicated on what is called the Von Erich family curse, like in real life. That's what it's called. And it's like a joke and it's not. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I had this in my notes to say, I didn't believe in curses per se, not in this way of I am cursed, whatever. But man, this makes you second guess that and really think through whether or not that's possible, because this family is just hit with one thing after another. And that's that's truly what this film is. It is following the tragedy of this. And I think they even say in the summary, like the triumph as well. And there's definitely some triumph, but I think the pervasive feeling is the tragedy. And
how much of it is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy of just the patriarch of this family pushing his kids too hard to sort of fulfill the dreams that he never could on his own. And that's something we'll talk about later, but it's wrestling, for those who don't know, professional wrestling, if you want to call it that, however you want to put it, the scripted wrestling has a ton of tragic backstories. There's an entire series called Dark Side of the Ring, which is, I think, on Vice, and it's on Hulu now. But they do an episode on the Von Erich curse. And but there are four seasons of this fucking show, because when you think about it, it's akin to the rock star lifestyle. It's these guys traveling the country. They have to stay in good shape. So they're you know, it's the 80s and 90s. They're taking steroids. They're staying up and doing cocaine and drinking and blah, blah, blah. It's just tragedy after tragedy in this business. This is just so happens to be all these people in the same family experiencing something similar.
Yeah. Wow. That's interesting that there's that many kind of terrible stories in this industry. That's crazy. But it jives. I mean, with the schedule, with the pain on your body, with the, what you have to do to kind of keep up and all of that. I mean, it makes perfect sense. But all that to say, it is a very tragic story, a tragic film, but there is something, and we said this about Oppenheimer as well, of there is something to be said for a really difficult topic and a really difficult film and coming out of it and going, wow, that was a really good movie.
All the heaviness in this, yeah. After when the credits came on, you know, I was floored and a bit drained.
Yeah.
But again, the theme of family, of these brothers and seeing the happiness that they experienced together, I still came out of it, not necessarily feeling happy, but feeling like fulfilled in a, like an emotional ride, and also sort of reflecting on the fact of like this poor fucking family. But
yeah. Well, and I think you'll get, like, I think it's fair to say without a spoiler, is there is some catharsis to this film. And I think that's how you can kind of come out of it. It's like, it would be terrible if it was just rough, 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 and then you get nothing. There's not a fairy tale to the story, but you do get this kind of almost resolution and some positivity out of it, I think, which is nice. So, and I think that jived with what the ratings are about this overall. Yeah. So, like, the Metacritic is, you know, 7.8 out of 10, which is pretty high, higher than I expected it, to be honest. And you looked at the Rotten Tomatoes. What was that?
Rotten Tomatoes is also really good. 89% for critics, 94% for audience. So.
Yeah. So people loved this. I mean, and it made its budget back and then some. It was a pretty relatively low budget, $15 million. And it made almost $41 million. So it didn't do bad in the theaters for something that is so hard to watch. And I think it's because it is such a compelling story. So, I mean, I think my review would be, I would definitely go see it. I think it's well worth seeing. And I think if I had to rate it, it would be in that range. It'd be like a 6.5 or a 7.
Mm-hmm.
And because it is very well done. But I will say, you know, trigger warning to people who want to go see this film is that there are themes and depictions of suicide in this film. And so it is not to be taken lightly. And I do sort of wish that was more publicly available information prior to seeing this film, because I do think it can be very triggering. Just a heads up that is part of this experience, but I do think it's very well done. What do you think?
Yeah, I think if we haven't made it clear that when we've used the word tragedy probably like a dozen times already in the podcast, and it is draining, because you were just like, how many bad things can potentially happen in this 2-hour film, and knowing that it's a true story. And we're going to get into the stuff that they left out as well. But I would agree with the Metacritic rating. I think on a personal level, I would probably put it at like an 8.5 on a personal level, because of how much I enjoyed this and because of some of the Easter eggs of knowing what I do know about wrestling of this era and whatnot. On a more objective level, yeah, I'd give it like a 7.5 or an 8, because I don't think that it's one that I want to revisit and rewatch again. But I do think that you'd be surprised. So if you're listening to this and considering watching this movie or not, I think that if you go into it knowing that it's going to be a very emotional journey, but that it is very, very, very good, you should definitely go watch it. So pretty good rating for both of us, I think.
Yeah, pretty good. I think you should go see it for sure. But if you haven't yet, now's the time. Turn around, don't drown. We're going to get into the spoiler zone. So there's a lot to dig into here. I do think, again, because there's some recurring rough themes, we won't dig deep into all of it, but I think the high level, it starts with something you pointed out of the patriarch of this family. Fritz is definitely living vicariously through his sons. And why is that such a recurring theme in just life, by the way, not films? Like, it just, why do we do this to our children? It's really kind of sad. But he didn't quite get the heavyweight championship title that he wanted in his career. He thought he deserved it and worked hard enough for it. He thought he was robbed for, you know, myriad reasons, whatever. And so he kind of aggressively coaches and trains his sons. And they're growing up in relatively rural Texas on a farm. So they're also physically working very hard. And they own, I don't know what you would call it. Maybe you know it better than me. But like, I don't know, an arena, like a sports venue sort of, where they run this out of. And they put on smaller shows, right?
Yeah. So essentially, this would be what's called a territory. Because before there was one or two companies on national television that comprised most of what we watch, you know, before that era, there was a point where there were like 6 to 12 different territories of wrestling across the country. So you had your Texas ones, and you had the Northeast ones, and you had the West ones, and superstars, wrestlers would go from place to place. And that's why in this film, they talk about the brothers going to wrestle in this. And oh, you're going to challenge this territory's champion. And there's a lot of overlap there. But so essentially their father runs a territory out of that one building. Yeah.
Okay, so that makes sense. And they're putting on these shows, and it is like local entertainment as well for, to your point, like people who are wrestling fans, and they're coming regionally to come see these things live, but they are broadcasting them and working on the rights to broadcast those. So like that's a recurring theme as well during the film, where Fritz is like trying to get better and better broadcasting reach and rights and trying to work with ESPN and all these things. So this is like, they have dual priorities here. They have to run a familial farm that seems to be at least part of their income, but their real bread and butter is trying to build this dynasty in wrestling, I think. And so, yeah, we have tragedy starts early for this family. Their eldest son, Jack Jr., dies from a shock and drowning incident when he's 6 years old. So he's actually the eldest son ahead of Kevin, who is the oldest living child. And that is Zac Efron's character. And we kind of see this whole story mostly through his lens, which I think is a really good lens to see it through, because he's the only surviving brother by the end of this story. And they kind of allude to that at the very beginning. I don't think I'm giving anything too much away there, but he is telling you the story of his family's tragedy to some degree.
And they did consult the real life Kevin Von Erich on this. He's actually on that. If you do decide to go watch that Dark Side of the Ring episode afterward, he is interviewed in that extensively about talking about the events, not of this, of the real life scenario, but you can see the overlap. But he was consulted heavily on this film. I believe Zac Efron actually spent a lot of time with him, just sort of getting a feel for his mannerisms and asking about the past and getting his take on these different things that happened.
Yeah, and I read like that Kevin Von Erich felt that the film did the best it could, right? Like he said there is stuff that's left out, but it all made sense. Like it wasn't anything that he thought was an insult per se. So I think overall it does a good job of telling the story. It goes into not quite a rivalry, but Kevin is kind of assumed to be the up and coming, first up and coming. They're all wrestling. They're all wrestlers. But he's assumed to be the next man up, so to speak, to go after this championship and this title. And he gets passed over is a big moment in this film for his younger brother, David. Yep. And that's a surprising moment for both of them. But what struck me, and you tell me, like, I thought you really saw, even though this family is a hard family to be in, it's a hard working family, there's a rough ask from you every day, the bond of brothers is really strong and it is pervasive throughout the film. And it's something that he says, Zac Efron's character, Kevin, says it, I think it's either at the very beginning or the very end, but he says, I used to be a brother.
That's at the very end. And that line hit me hard.
It hits hard. It hits so hard because this is his major identifier, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, wrestling is so important to them as a family, but emotionally, his first identifier is brother. And that becomes clear even when he's married later. You know what
with
I mean?
Like kids of his own.
With kids. Yep. Like, being a brother is his major responsibility. And you see him defer almost immediately to David. Like, it hurts. You can tell that he's hurt. Mm-hmm. But he's like, all right, that's what we're doing now. Like, it's you're up, kid, and we're going to support you, and you're going to do it, and I'm cheering for you.
And to give, I mean, Janelle agrees with me on this. After watching that documentary, just to give a little bit of insight here, the way that we read it, when they interview Kevin Von Erich about all the events that are confirmed, he says all these things happened. This movie and the documentary, according to all these other people that they've interviewed, it doesn't even do justice to how bad of a person Fritz Von Erich, the dad, was. Like, he, not only was he sort of trying to live vicariously and forcing his kids and pushing them to get back in, like to push through injury, didn't return to blind eye to different drug problems and whatnot, all that stuff. He even at one point tells Kevin in real life, you know, you're too much of a coward to kill yourself, and basically put a gun in his hand. Like, that actually happened. But Kevin in real life almost defends and seems, I don't know if it's like a Stockholm, so I don't want to, you know, go out of my way to say something controversial, but it is shocking how much he defends his dad's like misdeeds.
It's interesting you say that, because I didn't know the depth of his dad's misdeeds. I just sort of attributed it to this film, but I did hear that interview or a snippet of it, at least read that interview of him being like, yeah, my dad was hard, but not, you know, he was just trying to make us our best and all this stuff. And it's like, it does feel a little Stockholm syndrome-y. But I think it's also like, especially once you have moved on from the pain of something, you can make a lot of excuses for somebody. And if you have forgiven them, it's just not beneficial to you to stir that
up. Hold on to that. Yeah.
That's just my assumption. Cause like, if that's the level of basically abuse that he was putting on his family, like Kevin had to do a lot of work, is my assumption, to get over that, you know? And that's crazy that he was able to reach that. Again, the suicide in his family of being pervasive and this, and his dad having a role in that. I mean, that's hard to forgive. That's huge.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I want to backtrack a little bit though, because even though we're already getting a little bit heavy, I wanted to pick up on something you said about Kevin's first family is his brothers. That's his primary family, even when he gets his own. And I believe it was Jeremy Allen White who, when he was being interviewed about this again, they pointed out, as tragic as this was, he's like, that's not what it felt like while we were filming this and while we were delivering these lines of dialogue and hanging out with each other. He said, it just made me want brothers. He's like, I wish I had brothers when I was younger. And that's a cool takeaway from this, I think, in the midst of all the sadness.
Yeah, that is very sweet. And it makes sense because, again, it's this relentless support. I mean, you have this competitive nature behind what you're doing, and they are obviously all competitive guys. And the unfortunate coincidence of all being in wrestling means you're inevitably competing with each other. And they had some differing interests, but overall, they're all involved in this sport in some way. And you're going to come up against each other. And it feels like they're genuinely willing to not just take a back seat, but just actively promote your success. And like, I just think that's very familial brotherly love that once that's the decision, they're all behind it. And I love that for them. They're so sweet and kind and loving to each other. But they also experience a lot of loss as a result, because the pressure is intense throughout, you know.
And F this movie and this screenplay and Sean Durkin for that first 10 minutes of the movie where Fritz delivers that line of, well, everybody knows Carrie's my favorite, and then David, blah, blah, blah. And making me laugh at that first line of dialogue before I knew what was going to happen.
But then doesn't he continue to say, he's like, but that spot's always up. The rankings can change.
Yeah, like it's instilling this. And later in the movie and after watching it, you realize, oh shit, that is just him pitting them against each other to get to win his attention and his favor. Yeah.
And you think it's funny at first. And then I will say, even in the film, like not knowing the extent of it outside of the film, it gets uncomfortable. You're like, oh no, really? Yeah. He will trade you out. Like, I mean, quickly. Mm-hmm. And again, it's all in service of his goal. He feels again that he is living vicariously with who is the best opportunity for him to win this title. And it's really gross because it feels like it's that very toxic form of love, because it is conditional. Right. It feels his love as a patriarch, as their father, feels completely conditional. You have to do this. You have to be a part of this community, and you have to practically kill yourself for it. And otherwise, I'm not going to love you. I mean, imagine that for your whole life. And they just fucking hustle. They just do it. They just go, OK, copy that, Dad. We're going to bust our ass and do it, to the degree that when Kevin is passed over by David, David has been in a lot of fights, and he has a very controversial passing, because he, in the film, they show it as he's had a rough fight, seems a little physically beat up, And there's suspicions that he's ill because he's throwing up blood at his brother's wedding.
Yeah.
Which is not the order of events in real life. They obviously truncated some of this, but he is very sick and he's throwing up blood, but he still goes to Japan to defend the title he just won. And it's like a week apart. And he dies there unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. And he's 25. He's, you know, younger than Kevin. And he dies at age 25. And the official cause of death is ruptured intestines from enteritis.
Mm-hmm.
But there is some suspicion, and I didn't do a deep dive on this, but there was suspicion that it's actually a hydrocodone overdose.
Yeah.
Because of the pain that he was in from the fight and taking too many painkillers and things like that. So not entirely sure, but that is the official cause of death. And that's what they go into right after he wins. I mean,
yeah. I was a little not, it reminded me a bit of the, stick with me here, but like in Straight Outta Compton, they sort of downplayed some of the sins of the members of NWA. You know, they were not saints in the film, but you go out and you read about them and it's like, oh shit, this person like beat their wife and this person did this all throughout what should have been the course of the events in the movie. In this, I felt as though they did downplay some of that of the wrestling lifestyle. Like they do show mm-hmm. them drinking. And I think at one point they showed just Jeremy Allen White, you know, taking some sort of pills or something like that. But I felt like they probably should have spent more time on that because I think that adds to it of just how much it gets not just their family turned a blind eye to it. They, you know, they're supposed to be brothers. They're supposed to be taking care of each other, but they're sort of turning a blind eye to it. The business never seemed to care back then. Now there's a lot more strict drug policies and whatnot in the business to help people just fucking live longer and take care of themselves and be healthy. But back then didn't seem to matter. I wish they would have, I don't know, figured out a way to more organically include more of that, honestly.
Yeah, it feels like there's a lot of that in this film of these really tough moments that they're trying to make a little bit softer because of the volume of how many hard moments there are. So like it makes sense in why you would try to make it easier. I also think that's just a film thing too. It's like when someone is a protagonist and maybe even not just film, when somebody is supposed to be the protagonist of something, that then equals good guy. Right.
Right.
And it's like that's not necessarily true. Just because they're the center of the story doesn't mean that they're wholly good or wholly bad. I mean, and that's true of the antagonists as well, right? Like, I'm sure there were good things about Fritz von Erich as a father that are overlooked here or, you know, we don't get to deep dive on also. And I think that's just human nature, right? Like, nobody's all one thing, but it helps us follow the story as lay audience folks if we know who's a good guy and who's a bad guy. And I think that's how that happens. But again, I think this is something that it's so hard throughout that they had to just make it a little bit easier to get through.
Yeah.
Because we go from, I mean, a number of things happen. You know, he met and we glossed over his wedding, but Kevin meets Pam, who ends up being great for him and his family.
I love her. I mean, I know she's based on a real person.
Right.
But I also love her character and Lily James portrayal of her because I like that she is straightforward. She knows what she wants and she is not fawning over him because he's a local celebrity and whatnot, but she is just telling him like how this is going to be. And she just goes for it. Yeah. She is just a very strong character. And I like that about her and she loves him, but she is not going to bend over backwards and like overlook like his family does any shortcomings that he might have.
Yeah. She doesn't really give him a pass. I mean, we see a few times where she supports him, you know, to maybe an extreme degree when he's, again, kind of choosing his brother family over her and their child. But you get some subtext there of like, he feels like he is cursed. You know, he's going through it in that process as well. And she's such a good partner to him, at least as she is displayed in this film. And she's like, just as, like you said, a strong, assertive woman, but nurturing and forgiving and compassionate. She kind of holds all these things in one space at one time. And that's really beautiful because the family hasn't really fully accepted her the way that you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
And she just gives them a lot of grace and she lets them come around and she becomes a real anchor for them and the family. And she kind of like plays the long game in that way. She knows, hey, I love Kevin and I'm going to be here and they're going to get used to that. And they do. And they lean on her. And it's really sweet and kind. And yeah, Lily James' performance is excellent, which, by the way, as per usual, like, I haven't seen her in a bad thing yet, period. If you haven't seen her, the range on this girl, I mean, Mamma Mia, Cinderella, Guernsey, she's done a bunch of stuff recently that's escaping me. But anyway, she's really, really good. And she, yeah, does an incredible turn here as well.
I think I saw her first in Baby Driver, and I thought she was great in that. Yeah. I loved that movie.
Yeah. And she just, like I said, range. She just, she's played so many different types of folks, and she can sing and act, and she's beautiful and she's smart. And anyway, love her in this. She does a great job of bringing this person to life. So they get married though. And again, that's like, that dynamic is very hard for them because these tragedies are happening around them. And he, again, is feeling, it's implied, it's not said, but it's implied that he feels like a curse and he almost wants to stay away from her. And when his, I think his eldest is really young, he really struggles with it in that moment of like, what if something happens to my kid, you know?
Yeah, what if I pass it on to them, the curse?
It's almost like he feels like it's contagious. And they do that really well. And I'm struggling to remember exactly how, but they do that really well. It's not really with words, you know? It's shot in a way that you get all of that from just the action of
him sleeping in the gym and trying to stay away. And you're like, oh, are they having marital problems? But whenever they talk, it doesn't seem that bad. But eventually she sort of is cracking under this pressure and she gives him, I don't know if it's an ultimatum, but she just gives him the business of like, you need to be here. This is your family. I cannot do this by my, and that's when he sort of cracks and says that about, I just don't want to pass it on to my kids.
Yeah, 100%. And it comes, again, great performances on all sides. And, but unfortunately, again, we lead into a lot more tragedy. There's more training. There's more like, who's up next? You know,
I was going to say, dude, that wedding is that's like the peak of the happiness in the film. And it is all downhill from there.
100%. So I don't know that, again, I don't know that we want to belabor the point of how hard it is to watch some of this and how many bad things happen. So I'm going to kind of blow through it if that's okay with you. But
be my guest.
So Mike, another brother who has come up from this and come up through the ranks, so to speak, is he was never in real life really wanted to be a wrestler is the assumption.
Wasn't built the same as his brothers.
Yeah, he was not as bulky. He wrestled his whole life, like just like them, but he was just not as bulky. He was not naturally equipped to do this. He wanted to be a musician. He actually wanted to be a cameraman as well. He had done some camera work for the shows. But he primarily wanted to be a musician, apparently. And so he has a severe accident and also has an injury from wrestling. And so he's taken way too many pills and he's drinking too much and all the things. And he ends up actually overdosing on purpose after an accident that has left him with severe brain damage. He gets a crazy high fever. It's like 107 degrees, I think is what I read. And he has severe brain damage as a result, and he is going to need care pretty much the rest of his life. And he is no longer able to play music, which is shown in the film to be his actual passion. And so he purposely takes sleeping pills and alcohol and goes and sits, I think it's by a lake, if I recall correctly, and just kills himself. And he's not found for days. In real life, he wasn't found for days. So again, just a really devastating of like, I have to go fulfill my father's fucking dream here. And it literally kills me.
It was
directly or indirectly.
It was that scene. I don't know. I think out of my friends that went to see this, I want to say there were about six to eight of us. I think there was one person who said they didn't cry the entire film. Mm-hmm. I teared up, I think, twice. And one of the scenes was when he comes out of the coma, the medically induced coma. And he's doing the press conference. And this, again, really did happen. You can see the footage in that same documentary of him sitting there, not able to function. Like, he cannot move all his body parts. He cannot speak coherently and clearly. But they're like, do you think you're going to wrestle again? Like, the big family business? And he just, without hesitating, is like, yeah, I think I'll be back in there. And it's just the things these kids are willing to do for their father. It's crazy.
And how innately fucking wired is it that you are not even fully capable of speaking, really, and processing information, but what you knew is that you had to say yes to that fucking question.
Yep.
Like, that is so sad and also enraging in that same moment. And I was so devastated for him because, like, I would never promote by any means making this choice. I also wouldn't judge someone who made this choice, by the way. But seeing him in having the severe brain damage that he has, and like, intellect and passion and knowledge are critical to who I am as a person. And if I didn't have that capability anymore, I don't know who I would be. You know what I mean? And this is a person, I think, who doesn't know who he is anymore. He can't do anything that he wants to do. He can't even fucking wrestle. Like, so what is his purpose? And my heart breaks for that moment for him, that he just decides he can't do it.
And I'm trying to remember, this is such a difficult question to ask, but is it just because this is another moving scene of just in the feels, but was it Michael's funeral where the mom breaks down there and it's about her dress, where she just says, like, I can't put on this same black dress again. Everyone's going to look the same dress. Scene. That one killed me.
Yeah, that I think was that and the brother at the end scene. Those are the ones that I think really got me, is like, she just, imagine being this mom, you know, this, like, I'm getting choked up now. Like, imagine being this mom. You lost your firstborn son. You lost David. You now lost Mike. Like, it feels like a pervasive curse. How do you leave the room and go to that funeral and just go, I'm doing this again. I'm wearing this black dress again. And this is the moment where Pam becomes, again, a real anchor for this family. And she gets her ready and she gets her to go. And she's like, no, we got to do this and you can do this. But yeah, I mean, fucking hell. How do you face that over and over and over? And it's not the end. That's the worst part. And I think the thing about this film is, like, you know, it's not the end. You don't even need to know this story perfectly to know that it's not the end. The hits just keep on coming. We go from that pretty shortly after. Carrie also is a wrestler, and he's one of the youngest. And he is one who he had Olympic hopes. He wanted to go to the Olympics, and this is the year we boycott the Olympics. And his future is yanked away from him immediately. And so he has to pivot to this. And he does well, obviously. But then he has a drinking and a drug problem, just like we've talked about a couple times here. And he gets into a severe motorcycle accident. Mm-hmm. And he ends up losing his foot. Not immediately. They show it in the film as being immediate, but he does slowly end up having to lose his foot. And so he's on crutches and he can't move the same way. And he's in an incredible amount of pain. And he's angry, and all of his dreams, over even his backup dream, has now been dashed. And so he kills himself as well by gunshot in the front yard and under a tree. And that is a painful scene, because that is the one where Kevin comes out as basically blaming his dad.
Sticks it to him of, like, you were supposed to take care of him. I asked you this one favor, and you've seen all these kids of yours die. You haven't done anything to help them, and I asked you to do this one thing, and you still didn't do it.
Yeah, because he's warning him. He's like, things are not okay. Something is going to happen, and this is where we get into the nitty-gritty of, like, he's made some phone calls. He's talked to Carrie at one point. He doesn't sound good. Something is wrong. Keep an eye out. And it's true. He gets access to this gun that he shouldn't have access to. People aren't paying attention to him. They're not taking it seriously. And then he gets exactly what they think is going to happen, and he kills himself. And this is, I don't know if this happened in real life, obviously, but this is the one moment you see Kevin try to hold his father to account for this, at least slightly. And it's really hard. It's really hard to watch.
It's also a double tragedy as it relates to Carrie, because I remember while I was watching this, and I didn't start watching wrestling till 93 or so, when I was about 9. And I remember thinking, wait, when did Carrie lose a foot? Because I remember seeing him wrestling when I was a kid. And then it made sense when they show him rehabbing and learning how to not just walk with an amputated leg and using a sort of a boot stand-in type of thing, a prosthetic of some kind, but learning how to fucking wrestle again. Yeah. So I remember seeing him as a kid. He was wrestling in the biggest industry, WWF at the time, WWE now, with one foot. And I don't think a lot of people even knew it, which is crazy.
They must not have, because that just seems crazy.
And in a different movie, that would be where the movie ends, right? He triumphs, right. He comes back, he you know, builds himself back up, gets back in there. And no, not in this fucking movie because of this family curse.
Yeah, no, and he died in 93, so that kind of jives like with your timeline. So, I mean, I think it's, they don't really get into the thick of it, but it's implied that, like, he's one, just very dissatisfied, but two, he has, again, developed a real pain management drug problem. And we just unfortunately know what that can do to somebody. And so he just kind of gives in to it. And it's, again, understandable, the pain that he's in. And they show Carrie kind of going to heaven and placing this coin, you know, to cross. And it's this really, it's kind of this marrying of stories, I think. Like, you know, he's paying Charon to cross the River Styx. And it's this homage, I think, to this curse, the, like, I don't know, kind of the fable of it all, so to speak. And it's really beautiful and sad, you know, is I think that theme of this whole story is very beautiful and sad.
And just really quick, when I was watching it in real time, I didn't love when this scene first started, because you can't make this shit up of how tragic the situation is.
Yeah,
and
seems
it's been
insane.
This very depressing, grounded in reality, obviously a real story of this whole thing. And suddenly we get sort of this heaven scene. And I was having, not that I didn't like it, but I was just like, why all of a sudden do we have this added into sort of, are we trying to give this movie a happy ending of some sort of, now he's reunited with his brothers.
Yeah.
Then it cuts back to the shot of just Kevin with his body on the table. And you realize that's just Kevin making sense of this in his mind and seeing what he hopes is happening, I think, to try and put some kind of fucking positive spin on this situation is how I read it. I don't know if you did.
I didn't, but I think that's a really beautiful interpretation. I mean, I definitely imagined it as the thing that was happening for Carrie, you know,
but I
think either perception is valid. And I think yours makes a lot of sense for him to need some sort of anchor of, okay, they're all together now. At least they are all together. Like, I don't get to be a brother here anymore, but they get to be brothers together. And that's a really beautiful thought. I mean,
yeah.
I could see that being really cathartic for him.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I haven't seen this. I think I saw it in early January or so. So I might be misremembering, but I seem to remember it making a very hard cut from the brothers reuniting back to the table with Kevin.
Oh, yeah.
And Carrie
I think you're
so
right. I do remember that.
Yeah, just how I read it, but.
Yeah, and I think it could be either thing, but I think that that's a great way to think of it. And I think also, again, something that's not in the film is that this is not the last brother to pass. There's Chris, who is the actual youngest brother in real life. He's not in the film. He does also pass by suicide. And that's also a gunshot. And that's not covered here. They get into, Sean Durkin gets into in a couple of interviews of why he cut it. Again, to your point, he was writing this for 7 years. He said Chris was in it for 5 of those years. And then he felt like he had to make a decision about the story of it all, where he's like, you are telling a true story, but you're also trying to just tell a story, a narrative story. And it's very hard to have that level. It's hard enough with how much we've seen, as we've talked about, to now. And he said he thought, I don't know that this movie would have gotten made with one more moment like that in this film. And so he did trim that. And that is, again, another really sad moment for them as a family, that they lose yet another brother. And so that's where I say with Kevin, it feels like this is the moment where he is really alone and he needs something to make him feel like there's a reason for that. And at least they're all together. And yeah, I think that's beautiful for him. He also, the other thing we shouldn't neglect to mention is that he has recommitted to his own family in this time over the course of the years. He's refocused on his wife and his children. And he's still in the wrestling biz and he still focuses on that, but he handles it differently. And he doesn't, make it his sole focus, sole passion. He doesn't handle it like his father has, is what we see. And it seems, at least from what we see, to be a healthier relationship with it all. And again, I don't know if it's the very last frame, but it's toward the end where you see his big, beautiful family that he has been able to cultivate, and that they are thriving to this day in their, you know, still wrestling adjacent life, but it's been handled by his generation and going forward very differently. And so, again, I think that the movie ends on this catharsis for him and for this family, even though by no means a happy ending, but definitely a resolution, I think.
I think I was also, and I guess they symbolically showed us this, but I was hoping for more of a, again, it's based on a true story, so I was hoping for more of a comeuppance, I guess, for a reckoning for Fritz, aside from that moment where Kevin is holding him down and he realizes, oh, my son could kill me in this moment, but he doesn't do it, obviously. But I guess they do symbolically show it when Doris and Fritz are sitting then. I think he asks what's for dinner and she's like, I didn't make anything, like, you know, and kind of walks out on him. So in real life, they actually did divorce. So she had stayed with him through all of this and all of this death. But I guess at some point she hit a breaking point, which good for her, and she left him.
And I think, like, I mean, there's, God, there's so many breaking points you could point to, but in the film, they do a good job of making it feel like it's Carrie. And and it makes a lot of sense because, again, even Kevin is like, listen, you, like, I literally called you and asked you to protect him and you still fucking didn't, you know? And I just think that that's the marker of just an incredibly narcissistic, self-absorbed man who, his children were a reflection of him and his own success, and that's what they were there for. And it doesn't seem like they were there for much of anything else. And it's really pathetic, honestly, that your life can't amount to more on your own. And I don't feel a lot of sympathy for him that he was left as a result of this. And I hope that he learned at some point something from this, but he ended up passing away from brain and lung cancer at 68, not like anything really super brutal, but only a handful of years after his son Carrie dies. So 93, his son Carrie dies, and then he dies in 97. And so
if you want to feel even less sympathy for this guy than we already do, know that he said yes to, I don't know if it was his idea or if he just said yes to this, but he, in the 50s, when he was a wrestler, he played a Nazi character. He was okay with portraying a Nazi just to get, like, to get over as a bad guy and to have the audience hate him. So you can say different time, whatever the hell you want, but still, this guy 10 years after World War II was like, you know what I'll do? I will take these people that the entire fucking world hates just so I can get paid, essentially. Some people will tell you that that's where the curse originated, because he did this terrible fucking thing that then from then on his family was cursed. And I don't buy into that, but just know that that's out there.
I do think karma's a bitch. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, I do believe truly in karma, and I don't believe, obviously, his family deserved to suffer for any of his decisions.
I was going to say, it feels like if it was karma, he would have been more affected by this, and he didn't seem to give a shit.
And but that's the thing is, like, I don't know. I hope, I don't know. There's no way to know. But I would hope that this tormented him, you know, deep down. There's no way to know. But I think, again, just to end on a positive note, I think Kevin comes out of this strong, and the strongest that you can from this. And having had these cathartic experiences and having his own family, you know, really blossom into this beautiful thing. And for whatever reason, he's found a way to cope. I mean, to your point in his interviews, that's great for him. And I wish this person who's been through all this nothing but peace. Yep. So I'm here for it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is really hard to segue out of the real life story and the story in the film into other things, but just to get us away from some of that heaviness, was there anything else, you know, from a filmmaking perspective that you enjoyed here? Because for me personally, I think the soundtrack, I thought it was so, like, evocative of the time and place where this is. If you were to tell me, like, just Texas in the 80s and 70s, like, all the music, you got some Rush in there, some John Denver, some Tom Petty. So I think the music that they selected for the soundtrack here really does hit home and plays well.
Oh, yeah. I love the soundtrack. I totally agree. It's a healthy mix. I like the homage to, like, 80s Texas. I mean, I'm born and raised in Texas. I wasn't alive when this film started, but I was, you know, shortly thereafter here and aroundabouts. And definitely, you know, some of that just feels familiar. So there's some of that that just feels a little bit like home. And even though I wasn't big into this community or big into wrestling, I appreciate most sports in some form, especially as I get into them and watch them more. So this does, to your point, feel like a sports arts combo, which is kind of fascinating to me. And makes me more interested in it a little bit, I will say, like, just something I haven't really found much interest in. And they did such a good job that I was like, this is intriguing.
You can come to my buddy's WrestleMania party in April. We'll have you. We'll have you.
Oh my gosh. All right. I'm officially a WrestleMania fan. Got it. All right. Well, I mean, all that to say, I think this was a beautiful film. It was very well done. I do think it's worth a watch, again, keeping in mind trigger warnings and things. Yeah. And if you're not up for that, completely understand. But if you are and you want to give it a shot, I think it's worth a watch. I think, to your point, I wouldn't go back and rewatch it over and over, but I think it's a great, it's a good piece of filmmaking.
I think there is one more thing that we have to touch base on just for the wrestling fans who may be listening out there. So, Mackenzie, you have never watched a minute of wrestling in your life, it sounds like.
I mean, like, in the background at a, you know, maybe a party or whatever. Like, I don't really know anything about it. I know The Rock, you know, I know the, like, let's get it on. I know the 90s passing phrases that you
I think let's get it on is a Marvin Gaye song, but.
Okay, whatever. I don't know. You know what I'm talking about, though.
Barry is Barry White or Marvin, either way. Okay, I have to call this out for the wrestling fans out there. So, Mackenzie, all I'm going to do is I'm going to say a single word, and I just want you to repeat what you hear, okay?
Oh,
as best as you can. I'm going to back away from my mic. You might need to do the same, but just repeat after me, okay? You ready?
Oh, my God. Okay.
Woo!
Woo!
You just did a better Ric Flair impression than the fucking actor they paid in this movie to play Ric Flair. That is the biggest thorn. You know, I didn't even think about this when I gave my rating, but if I took half a point off there in my 7.5, it's
the
because
Ric Flair.
Half a point is this. He's the main, you know, I mean, Fritz is obviously the antagonist of this film and in real life. But as far as the wrestling storylines go, he's built up as this big boss, and you're waiting throughout the movie to see him. And when he finally shows up, he is nothing like the real life Ric Flair. They found the one guy who couldn't do a good woo. I don't
care. Wow. Interesting. Well, that was a fascinating exercise. I also thought he was pretty mediocre. I didn't know the background, but I was like, who is this guy?
Yeah, dude. I will say the Harley, and again, this is before my time. But Harley Race, the guy who they're fighting in the first few matches for the title, like the different brothers, he is the actor who played him did it. I don't know if he already looks like that or if he got his body into
You're like,
just,
is it him?
He's about 20 to 30 pounds heavier than what a dad bod should be. But that's how Harley Race looked. Like, they were not, you know, jacked up dudes aside from the Von Erichs back then. It was a lot of just sort of paunchy guys or just really tall guys who happened to like wrestling, you know.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. Well, good. Hey, I learned a lot this week, I feel like. So I'm here for it. I will say our sports month, aka March Madness, is going to continue next week with what is my wheelhouse, one of my wheelhouses with regard to sports, which is baseball. Our baseball entry is going to be A League of Their Own. I was the tie-breaking vote. So sorry, not sorry. Super excited to talk about it. But for now, go have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.
Cheers.